16.
It's our text this morning. Who's king in Judah? Jehoshaphat. Who's king in Israel? Okay, Ahab died. If you remember, Jehoshaphat, Ahab had just died. He served 22 years, and he had gone up to Ramoth-Gilead. If you remember, he and Jehoshaphat had made an alliance with each other, and Ahab asked Jehoshaphat if he would go up to battle with him to take Ramoth-Gilead away from who? Anybody remember? Ben-Hadad, the Syrians, okay? So Ahab already made up his mind he wanted to go, if you remember the lesson from last Sunday. And some of you missed it a couple of weeks. But he already made up his mind to go, but he called 400 prophets because he wanted somebody to tell him what? It was all right. Yeah, it's okay. You go ahead and do it. And all of them did. But that wasn't good enough for Jehoshaphat. He said, is there not someone here who can inquire of the Lord? And Ahab said, well, there's Micaiah, but I don't like him because he doesn't ever say anything good about me. But he called him anyway, and what did Micaiah say? Go ahead and go, okay, to start with. But then what did he say when Ahab said, have I not told you to tell me exactly what the Lord tells you? So what did he say? He said, I see Israel wandering without a leader and everybody going to their house. But it didn't make any difference because Ahab had decided he was going to go, and he went anyway. But he gave some credence to what Micaiah had to say because he did what? Anybody remember? He disguised himself as a regular soldier, but just by chance, he was struck by an arrow, he died, and his chariot was washed, and the dogs did what? And what's the significance of that? It was prophesied, yeah, that that's what was going to happen. And it came true just as the prophecy had said. So all that Ahab did, his exploits, his ivory houses, his wealth, his accomplishments came to what? Came to nothing. Because now he's standing in judgment before God and facing eternity in his sins. But what happened to Jehoshaphat that went with him? The Lord was with him, protected him, and he returned safely back to Jerusalem. As we begin our story this morning, as he's on his way back to Jerusalem, Jehu, who was the son of Hanani, came out to meet him and said, should you help the ungodly and love those who hate the Lord? Because of this, the wrath of God is upon you. But he said, there's some good in you in the fact that you've taken the wooden idols out of the land and you've rid them of that and you've set your heart on seeking God. Well, there are those today who do the same thing. It seems like they love helping the ungodly and associating with the ungodly more than they do Christians. But so Jehoshaphat again went out through the land trying to turn the people back to God and turning the people back to God. Now, he did this. How long did Jehoshaphat reign? 25, wasn't it? Yeah. And in the beginning of his reign, he had rid the land of all the idols and he had went out teaching the people and turning the people back to God. This is toward the end of his reign, about 6, 7, 8 years before the end of his reign, and he's having to do what again? Same thing. So, you know, the people over a period of time, and we've seen that in Ahab's day, I mean not Ahab's day, Asa's day, and we've seen that in his day. You know, Asa, his father turned the people back to God, but over a period of time, when Jehoshaphat became king, he had to do it again. And now he's going through the land again, turning the people back to God. So does it seem to you that the people's hearts were really where they ought to be? Sure, they turned back to God and they were worshiping God, but there was this weakness there that over a period of time, as another generation came along, we talked about that in a couple of lessons ago, the weakness would turn them back and they'd have to be renewed. So he goes out again through the land from Beersheba to the Mount of Ephraim, it says. Now that would be Judah and Benjamin, possibly Ephraim, because you remember a few lessons ago those from Judah had, or from Israel had come down to Judah. Ephraim was part of that, turning the people back to God. Now, he set up judges in the fenced cities of Judah, and he told them, consider carefully what you do, because you're not judging for man, but you're judging for God. So be careful, and when you judge, when you give a verdict, make sure that it's pleasing to the Lord. And he said, let the fear of the Lord be on you. Judge carefully. And he made a statement here, for the Lord our God, in the Lord our God, or with the Lord our God, is no injustice or partiality or bribery. What's the temptation of a public official sometimes?
Those
three things. Yeah. You're partial to certain people, so there's a temptation to be partial. There's a temptation to take bribes for certain things. And Jehoshaphat says, you don't do that. You're judging for the Lord. You're not judging for man. You don't take bribes. You don't show partiality. You judge righteously and not through injustice. And that's not only a temptation for people in public office, but people in management, people in positions of authority, same principle. There's a lesson there for us. Okay, so also Jehoshaphat took some of the Levites, the priests and leaders of the people, to be judges in Jerusalem. And he gave them the same orders to judge fearfully, faithfully, wholeheartedly in the fear of the Lord. And he said, every case that comes before you from your fellow countrymen, whether it's bloodshed or law or commandments or ordinances, whatever it is, you warn them that they don't sin against the Lord, that they do the Lord's will. Otherwise, his wrath is going to come on you, and it's going to come on your brothers. This do, he said, and you will not sin. He put Amariah, the chief priest, over religious matters, and he put Zebediah over the matters of the king. And he also set, of course, the Levites as officials in authority, and he told them, deal courageously, and the Lord will be with you and with those who are good. Well, interesting point where he says, you warn them to not sin against the Lord. And if they didn't do that, wrath was going to come on who? On them and the people who sinned. So, what lesson is there for us in that? Look over to Ezekiel chapter 3. Passage is familiar to all of us, I'm sure. Ezekiel chapter 3. Verse 17 through 19. Begin in verse 17. This is the Lord speaking to Ezekiel. Says, son of man, I have made thee a watchman over the house of Israel. Therefore hear the word at my mouth, and give them warning from me. When I say unto the wicked, thou shalt surely die, and thou givest him not warning, nor speakest to warn the wicked from his wicked ways to save his life, the same wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at thine hand. Yet if thou warn the wicked, and he turn not from his wickedness, nor from his wicked way, he shall die in his iniquity, but thou hast delivered thy soul. Now what's the lesson for us in both those instances? We have a responsibility. Yeah, we've got a responsibility. We've got an obligation to teach people. They may not accept it, but if we try and they don't accept it, then it's on them. If we don't try, then it's on us. And that's exactly what Jehoshaphat is telling the priests and the Levites. You warn them not to sin against God, or wrath's going to be on you as well as it's going to be on them. And today, we have the same charge. We have to teach. We have to warn. If we don't, that wrath is on us. If we do and they don't listen, then it's on them. It's on them anyway, but we have an obligation ourselves. Good lesson, I thought in that. Any comments? On the other hand, look at Ahab. When he was reproved for what he did, what did he do? He got mad. Put Micaiah in prison, just, you know, sulked.
We all make mistakes. Somebody comes to us, tax dollars for that.
Right. And if we're not, then we'll, yeah. That's a very good point. Very good point. And one we need to consider. And because Jehoshaphat was the kind of leader that he was, we see, and we're going to see that as we go on into the lesson today, we see the people of Judah were different. Because Ahab was what he was, and Jeroboam and all those kings, we see how Israel was. Good point of influence. Anything else?
Think about for a member of a congregation that's sending out who doesn't. There are doors of opportunity that are up there, and it's not going to build those up by doing whatever is necessary to help.
Exactly. Very good. Well, after Ahab was killed in battle, his son Ahaziah came to the throne, ruling in Samaria, which is where the capital was. What kind of person was Ahaziah? Ruled 2 years, didn't rule very long. More than likely, if you think about the fact that he came to rule the 17th year of Jehoshaphat, ruled in maybe the latter couple of years of his father's life. What kind of person was he? Good king, bad king? All of Israel's kings were what? Bad kings, okay? He followed in the way of his father and his mother, which means what? Not good. They were worshipers of Baal, okay? So he followed in the Baal worship. He followed in the path of his mother and his father. His father was Ahab. His mother was Jezebel. She was the instigator of a lot of it. And he followed in the way of Jeroboam, which was what? Worse than the golden calf. So he worshipped the golden calf. He worshipped Baal. So he was as bad as Ahab. He was as bad as the rest of them. And he had the influence of his mother and his siblings to help him to be that way. Well, God through Jehu had already warned Jehoshaphat against the dangers of making alliances with Ahab and told him of the consequences. Because you've done this, you know, wrath of God is going to be on you. He'd already warned him of those consequences. But regardless of those warnings, Jehoshaphat made an alliance with Ahaziah. And I'm getting a little bit ahead of the other story. There's a story in between this, but I want to go ahead and point this out. 2 Chronicles chapter 20, verse 35 says, he made an alliance with Ahaziah, who was guilty of wickedness. And we see that in Ahaziah's life. But just as he had allied himself with Ahab, he allied himself with Ahaziah, Ahab's son. And they made an agreement to build a fleet of ships to sail to Ophir for gold. This gold of Ophir must have been very, 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 very good, very, very, caused a lot of wealth. Because who else went to Ophir for gold? Solomon. He had a fleet of ships along with Phoenicia and sailed down to Ophir for gold. And of course, David talks about it. Job makes reference to it. Isaiah makes reference to it. So it must have been something that was really something to be desired. So Jehoshaphat decides that he and Ahaziah together are going to build a fleet of ships. And they built them down at Ezon-Geber on the tip of the, I think this is the Gulf of Aqaba. They built these ships. Well, didn't work out very well. They never went and got gold because God sent Eliezer to Jehoshaphat and said, because you've made an alliance with Ahaziah, the Lord's going to destroy what you made. So they were destroyed at Ezon-Geber. Now, we don't know if they set sail and they were wrecked, or if some something of nature like a hurricane wrecked them right there on where they were being built. We don't know. But God caused them to be destroyed, and they never made it. Ahaziah wanted to go with the men, and Jehoshaphat wouldn't let him. So just as God had prophesied through Eliezer, they didn't make it. So, you know, as Wayne said a minute ago, Jehoshaphat was a righteous man. He did a lot of good things, but it seems like he didn't display very good judgment sometimes in the things that he did in forming the alliances. And the result was what? Disastrous. And we've talked before, you know, when righteous people make alliances with unrighteous people, usually what happens? the negative wins. That's exactly right. Yeah. Sometimes the faithful is able to influence the unfaithful, and maybe that was what Jehoshaphat thought. Maybe he thought, if I make an alliance with Israel, I can be a good influence on them. I can turn them around. I can cause them, you know, to be in favor with God like we are. Maybe he thought that. I don't know. But it didn't happen that way. And rarely does it, because when faithful and unfaithful are with each other, usually the faithful is drugged down instead of the unfaithful coming up. But there are exceptions to that, and that's very good.
Wherefore, why did Paul blame the sacrifice of sex to be unequal yoke to get an unbeliever?
Yeah.
Same thought here.
Yeah. Yeah. And God had told Israel time and time again, don't be associated with the people of the land, because that's what's going to happen. And so, you know, he's wiser than we are. And through inspiration, Paul spoke that, and it's true.
My takeaway from that lesson is that primary lesson, very interesting. You know, but it's also interesting to me, like, that you see God working with Jehoshaphat, both with the case that they have, as well as this case. God is chastening him. This kind of first king, verse 48, there's either some changing or rebuild. There's another opportunity to get it.
Now, not going to do it. Yeah, very good. Very good point. And there are several points that we can make to those. And like I said, you all think of things that I didn't think of, and that's what makes the class so much better. So if you think of that, don't be afraid to just contribute, because that's what it's all about. At this time, Moab was under tribute to Israel. 100,000 lambs, 100,000 rams per year. They were either give the rams or the wool, one of the two, could be either. But anyway, after Ahab died, Moab rebelled against Israel. And Edom at this time was without a king. They were ruled by a deputy. And that brings us up to the next story that we skipped. And we'll go back and pick up in chapter 20 of 2 Chronicles, beginning with verse 3. The king of Moab had gathered together an army, a vast army of the Moabites and the Ammonites and those of Mount Seir. And I guess I deleted slide. I'm sorry. Anyway, here are the Edomites, here's Moab, and this is Ammon. And I say Edomites because the text actually doesn't bear out that these were Edomites. But if you go back, who dwelt at Mount Seir? Go back to when Joseph met Esau and where Esau settled. Who dwelt at Mount Seir? Yeah, Esau, the Edomites. Because Esau's name was changed to Edom, which means red. So when you think about that and you go on down in this story, and I think it's verse 10, gives reference to the fact that when Israel entered the land, they passed by Edom. So if you put those two together, I think we're actually talking about the Ammonites, the Moabites, and the Edomites. So the Moabites had gathered this large army together, these three nations, and they were invading the land of Israel. So we will refer to it as an invasion of the Moabites, Ammonites, and Edomites. Now, remember, the Moabites and the Ammonites were who? Sons, incestuous sons of Lot by his daughters after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. So Moab and Bimami, Moabites, the Ammonites, and then of course the Edomites were, as we said, were descendants of Esau, of Edom. So some men came to Jehoshaphat and they said, there's a vast army that's coming from the other side of the sea, and they're coming up and they're already at En-Gedi. So Jehoshaphat was afraid, and he called all the people together that he could get to Jerusalem. Now, did Judah have a standing army? 1,000,000 men, wasn't it, that Jehoshaphat had, in excess of 1,000,000 men? But he couldn't call those together right quick, because if you look at En-Gedi, here's Jerusalem, here's En-Gedi. So they're very close. So he wouldn't have had time to call all these people together. So he does gather all of that he can of Judah to Jerusalem. And they come to the temple. And they're in the new court. And Jehoshaphat proclaims the fast. He calls them together and he stands up and he prays. And let's look at verses, chapter 20 of 2 Chronicles, beginning with verse 6. And Jehoshaphat, verse 5, stood in the congregation of Judah in Jerusalem in the house of the Lord before the new court and said, O Lord God of our fathers, art not thy God in heaven, and rulest not thou over all the kingdoms of the heathen? And in thy hand is there not power and might, so that none is able to withstand thee? Art not thou our God, who didst drive out the inhabitants of this land before thy people Israel, and gavest it to the seed of Abraham thy friend forever? And they dwelt therein, and have built thee a sanctuary therein for thy name, saying, If, when evil cometh upon us, as the sword, judgment, or pestilence, or famine, and we stand before this house, and in thy presence, for thy name is in this house, and cry unto thee in our affliction, that thou wilt help here and help. And now, behold, the children of Ammon and Moab and Mount Seir, whom thou wouldest not let Israel invade when they came out of the land of Egypt, but they turned from them and destroyed them not. Behold, I say, how they reward us to come to cast us out of thy possession, which thou hast given us to inherit. O our God, will thou not judge them? For we have no might against this great company that cometh against us. Neither know we what to do, but our eyes are upon thee. So Jehoshaphat stands and he prays to God. God, are you not the God of our fathers? Are you not God in heaven? Are you not ruling over all the kingdoms of the earth? In your hand is there not power and might? We don't know what to do. We're powerless before these people. You're the one who brought us into this land, and we built this sanctuary, and we stood in front of this sanctuary, and you promised that if we prayed to you that you'd help us. So we're powerless by these people. We're waiting on you to tell us what to do. So no one can withstand your power. And God calls Jahaziel, who was a Levite, of the sons of Asaph, the descendants of Asaph, and he came forth and he said, Listen, all you inhabitants of Judah and all you inhabitants of Jerusalem and Jehoshaphat, this is what the Lord has to say. Don't be afraid. Don't be dismayed because of this multitude. Tomorrow, go down against them. They're going to be coming up the ascent of Ziz, and you'll find them at the end of the brook before the wilderness of Jeruel. But there's no need for you to fight. Just position yourselves and see the salvation of the Lord. And the Lord will be with you. Don't be afraid. Don't be dismayed. Just go out against them tomorrow, for the Lord is with you, for this is not your fight, but the who? The Lord's. This is the Lord's fight. Now, why would this have been the Lord's fight? What had Jehoshaphat done? He called to the Lord. He had prayed to the Lord, we need your help. We know that you promised that you'll do this, and we need your help. We're calling on you. They were trying to do right. Their lives were what they ought to be for the most part. So what's God said that he will do if we pray to him for help? He'll be there. That's right. He'll help. He had promised Israel that he would help. So this was the Lord's fight. I'll be with you. I'll fight against you. Or for you against them, and I'll take care of it. You won't even have to fight. You won't even have to lift a spear or a sword. I'll do this. So Jehoshaphat and all those who were there bowed themselves with their faces to the ground, showing reverence to God, and they worshiped before God. And then the Levites, the descendants of Korah and Kohath, stood up and praised God. So you look at what Israel is doing, and you look at what Judah is doing, and you see exact opposite of each other. We talked about that just a minute ago, but we'll talk about that in a minute. They got up early the next morning. They went out into the wilderness of Tekoa. And as they were going, Jehoshaphat told them, Now listen, put your trust in the Lord. He's going to do what he said he would do. you'll be successful. He set the singers in front as they went along singing and praising God and saying, give thanks to the Lord, for His loving kindness endureth forever. And as they went along, when they got to where the battle was, the men of the Moabites and the Ammonites had laid ambush as the Lord laid the ambush. But they had turned on the men of Mount Seir and destroyed them. And so when that was over, they began fighting with each other until they were all dead. There wasn't one left alive. So when Israel got there where the battle was and they came where they could see, all they saw was dead bodies. There wasn't anybody that was left alive. So the Lord had done what? Exactly what He said He would do. The Lord always does what He says He will do. He had promised them and he delivered. Well, there was so much spoil. How many days did it take them to gather it? 3 days. The gold, the silver, the precious stones, the clothing, the goods. It took them 3 days to gather all that together. There was so much of it. Would this have helped their wealth? But greatly. So what did they do on the fourth day? Somebody tell me. They worshiped God. The fourth day they gathered together and they worshiped God and thanked God for what He had done. And every man returned to Judah. Every man. There was no one that was lost. There was no battle. God destroyed them. So they returned to Jerusalem with Jehoshaphat at the head. They were rejoicing. They were happy. They were singing. And they went to the temple. And there they thanked God for what they had done. Now, when the other kingdoms in the land heard what had happened, they were afraid. And rightly so, because here God had fought for them and destroyed this vast army, and they didn't have to do anything. So God gave them peace. He gave them rest on all sides because their neighbors were scared of them. Now, any comments before we go on? Very good. Very good.
Back in verse 7,
the friend of God. Yeah. And when we think about the battle belongs to the Lord, there's a good application in that. Wayne's bringing up. You know, not only did God help them, but when we have difficulties, when we have problems, when we have things that are too strong for us, when we go to God in prayer and we ask for God's help, what does God promise He'll do? Promise He'll help us. The battle belongs to the Lord. Our battles that we have to face are the Lord's if we are righteous and we try to do right and we depend upon the Lord.
Yeah,
very good. Very good.
Well, I think one other thing that he invokes the promises that God has made. So he had very specific promises because God has made specific promises for us to look at the promises God has made to us. Also, there's a lot of people that are inclined to go too far. God promised them health and wealth, and God hasn't promised those promises.
Right.
Humans promised the things that God hasn't promised. The other thing that is amazing to God, this was clearly a problem, but yet when it came time the next day, He didn't lead with His mighty soldiers, which we would still be inclined to do. He led with the sinners. I would have had them in the back. But He's leading with the sinners. So He is completely outcome for me.
And what's this reminiscent of? Go back to David and Solomon. Go back to David and his victories and singing and dancing before the Lord. Go back to the promises that God made to David in 2 Samuel chapter 7. Go back to Solomon at the time of the building of the temple in 1 Kings chapter 8, where Solomon prayed to God to do the very thing that Jehoshaphat has asked him to do. When we pray toward this place, you know, whether we're in captivity or whatever our problem is, that You help us. And God promised that He'd do that. And symbolize that by in a symbol coming down and dwelling in the temple. No, go ahead. That's fine.
I think that David's faith, when he goes back to law, the things promised to them, when he's told them the Lord would be with them, certain things, goes all the way back to that. Not just David, but even further back. David had something to rely on.
Very good. Very good. And this to me is reminiscent of those times. Now sure, there were some problems. When we look at all this, Rehoboam, he served God faithfully for 3 years, then he fell away, he ruled for 17 years, he's listed as a bad king, but he died a natural death, and he was buried in the city of David. His son Abijah, the same thing. 3 years, he didn't follow God like he should, but he also died a natural death and was buried in the city of David. And God helped Abijah defeat Israel, if you remember. God, as far as Rehoboam was concerned, when he fell away, allowed Shishak to come in. If you remember, out of Egypt, he took all the wealth of Judah away. So, some problems there. But then we come down to Asa, 41 years, rid the people of the land of the idols and the Sodomites and those kind of things. God delivered Judah from the Ethiopians during that time. He did reproach Asa, and because Asa had hired the Syrians to come down and help with Israel instead of relying on God. And because of that, he said, you've given the Syrians an opportunity, and we did. We see that in what we're studying the last few weeks. But in the end, Asa became diseased in his feet. He didn't rely on God for help, but he died also a natural death and was buried in Jerusalem, in the city of David. Then Jehoshaphat comes along. He continues the reforms of his father. He served God with his whole heart. He taught the people the laws and the commandments. He fortified the cities. He survived the battle of Israel with Syria. And God destroyed the armies of the Moabites, the Ammonites, and the Edomites because of Jehoshaphat and Judah's faithfulness. And he also, although it hadn't happened yet, died a natural death and was buried in Jerusalem. But on the other hand, here's Jeroboam. God made the promises to him. He built the golden calves. He turned the people to idol worship. And he was evil. But he died a natural death. Nadab, his son, begins to reign. He followed in the sins of his father. How did he die? Remember? Baasha murdered him. So he was murdered. And God had made a promise to to Jeroboam that his descendants, the ones that died in the field would be eaten by vultures, and those that died in the city would be eaten by dogs. In other words, they weren't going to be buried. So Nadab was murdered by Baasha. Baasha followed in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. He was reproved by Jehu, and also the prophecy made of him that his descendants would be eaten by dogs and vultures. They wouldn't be buried. But he did die a natural death. Then Elah comes on the scene. 2 years. Followed in the sins as well, murdered by Zimri. And Zimri killed all the house of Baasha, fulfilling the prophecy that was made about him. Then Zimri ruled for a week, and Omri, the leader of the army, and the army came besieged Tirzah. So what did Zimri do? Committed suicide, burned the palace down around him. And so Omri becomes king, period of civil war. During that time, continued in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, sinned more than any king in Israel that had been before him. And then his son Ahab begins to reign. And we know Ahab. He not only continued in the sins of Jeroboam, but he sinned even more than Omri had. Married Jezebel. Jezebel was a bad influence on him. She was totally wicked, totally evil, and led him to do many of the things that he did. God attempted to show Ahab that he was the true God and to turn Ahab back to God by helping him defeat the Syrians a couple of times. Ahab didn't get the lesson. Ahab didn't want to turn back. That's the difference in Jehoshaphat's attitude and Ahab's attitude. And of course, he was killed in battle with the Syrians over Ramoth-Gilead. And also, the prophecy had been made to him that his descendants would be eaten by dogs and vultures and wouldn't be married. So you see Judah trying to serve God, faithful, calling on God, God helping them, prospering them. And then you see Israel over here, sinful, wicked, doing wrong. Things are bad for them. Things are good for Judah. Fixing to turn around for a little bit. Fixing to get a little bit confusing. But you see that contrast. And we look at that contrast today. We look at people who are trying to do right when they do wrong. Sometimes God reproves us. But people who do wrong, in the end, as Ahab did, they're going to pay for what they did. Comments?
They have about 6 to 5 years of good. Four marries the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel.
Yes.
Then their son, Rehoboam, Athaliah, four married her.
Because she murdered all her grandchildren.
So they have a Jezebel family. Over to you.
Yeah. And there's a lesson there, for sure. Anything else?
This story, comments been made, I was concerned with the all nations. Go back and look back when God told Elijah to go and see El Syria. That was in 1 Kings chapter 19 and verse 15. Now Jehoshaphat, quite a bit later, now talked about how God rules over all the kingdoms of the heathen. He says, relative to these three nations, causing God to judge them. There's a thread running through here. He realized that God is concerned with all the kingdoms. For Jonah, it was judging him. That's it. Truly, God rules the kingdoms. There's a theme here.
That's a very good point. And also during this thread that runs through there back during the time of David, Solomon, on a different note, we see a distinction between Israel and Judah. So we see this division coming before it gets here, but that's very good. Anything else? Okay. Appreciate your attention.